Good morning. Welcome to a reading of the Worcester Business Journal. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Today we'll be reading from the latest edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Primorial Foundation for the Blind. This is Mary, reading with Jane, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now, here is Jane.
Good morning. We'll begin with a story on Greater Worcester Community Foundation increasing its annual earmark for its 50th anniversary. Greater Worcester Community Foundation is celebrating its 50th anniversary by earmarking $2 million to support area nonprofits and launch new programs. The $2 million represents a 50% increase in the organization's discretionary payout. Broadly, the funding will be split between two buckets, the foundation announced on Tuesday. The first will be $1.05 million split among five nonprofits who work across a variety of issues, including early childhood opportunities, pathways to home ownership, immigrant assistance, improving food security, and supporting maternal health. The second bucket, representing $950,000, will be for Greater Worcester Community Foundation-led programs centering around arts, creativity, affordable education, and affordable housing. This milestone is both a celebration and a call to action. Pete Dunn, President and CEO of Greater Worcester Community Foundation, said in the announcement. The first batch of funding is broken down as $250,000 to Worcester nonprofit Edward Street Child Services for its Homes 3 initiative, a program that centers around using triple-decker homes as platforms for child care and home ownership for child care providers. $150,000 to Community Legal Aid and $150,000 to Accentria Immigrant Legal Assistance Program, both Worcester-based nonprofits to support staff to process immigrant documentation and cover associated filing fees. $250,000 to Fitchburg-based United Way of North Central Massachusetts to support the exploration and implementation of a North County regional food transportation system for North Central food pantries. $250,000 to Pernay Family Health Service for its universal home visiting program, which conducts home visits for newborns and their families. The second batch of funding for internally led programs includes $500,000 for a new loan fund for community development corporations in Worcester County to support pre-development costs for affordable housing projects. $250,000 for a new grant program for Worcester County Libraries to offer arts programming for children and youth. $200,000 for a new emergency fund for the Greater Worcester Foundation scholarship students to cover unexpected financial expenses, and the Greater Worcester Community Foundation holds $227 million in assets, according to the Journal's Research Department. I'm sorry, I have mixed up pages here. So I will continue with Haywood names UMass Memorial's Babu as Chief Medical Officer. Gardner-based Haywood Healthcare has named Dr. Kavita Babu, a UMass Memorial Health Medical Director and UMass Chan Medical School Professor, as its new Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs. Dr. Babu's depth of experience, clinical expertise, and commitment to patient-centered care make her an outstanding addition to our leadership team, Haywood President and CEO Rosanna Penny said in announcing Babu's hire Thursday. Babu has worked for UMass Memorial and UMass Chan for more than a decade, most recently serving as Medical Director of Community Benefits and as an emergency physician. She is a professor of emergency medicine. Babu will replace outgoing Haywood CMO Dr. Frank Sweeney, who announced plans to return to retirement in January. Sweeney came out of retirement to serve as Haywood CMO in January 2025 as the network worked to regain its footing following a Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. Babu holds a bachelor's degree and doctor of medicine degree from Brown University in Rhode Island, as well as an MBA from the Eisenberg School of Management at UMass Amherst. She has a reputation as a strong community advocate, having served as UMass Memorial's first chief opioid officer, co-director of UMass Memorial Medical Center's Medical Respite Program, and founder of the UMass Memorial's Road to Care, a mobile clinic that provides free medical care to people with housing and food insecurity and or substance use disorder, combating and responding to opioid abuse and its fallout is a particular specialty of hers. Haywood operates hospitals in Gardner and Athol, as well as Haywood Medical Group, a nonprofit, multi-specialty, and primary care group. And continuing, a story about the largest brewery in central Massachusetts surpasses 100,000 barrels for the first time. Handler Family Brewing was again the largest brewer in central Massachusetts in 2025, surpassing 100,000-barrel milestone for the first time. Fueled by its acquisitions of Worcester-based Wormtown Brewery and Everett-based Night Shift Brewing in 2024, the parent company of Jack's Abbey Craft Lagers produced 101,000 barrels of beer in 2025. That marked a 17.4% increase from 86,000 barrels in 2024, according to data from the National Brewers Association Trade Group. The second and third largest brewers in the region are both brands operated under the Boston-based Barrel One Collective. Its Westminster-based Wachusett Brewery produced 15,000 barrels in 2025, while Worcester-based Greater Good Imperial Brewery produced 12,000, according to data provided to the Worcester Business Journal Research Department. Statewide, the largest craft brewer in Massachusetts is Boston Beer Company, parent company of Sam Adams Boston Brewery. It produced 1.03 million barrels in 2025. Second statewide is the combined brands under Barrel One, which manufactured 104,960 barrels. Handler is third. A barrel of beer equals 31 gallons. Handler's 13 million gallons of beer in 2025 could fill almost five Olympic-sized swimming pools. Handler employs 149 people in central Massachusetts and 334 company-wide. With 66 different products across its brands, according to information provided to the Business Journal's Research Department. In addition to producing the Night Shift, Wormtown, and Masshole beer brands, Hender performs contract brewing through its Jack's Beverage Company subsidiary. Hendler has looked to re-energize existing locations since its acquisition of Wormtown, renovating its Worcester tap room and reopening it in April. The company renovated and rebranded its former Wormtown tap room at Patriot Place in Foxborough into the Mass Appeal Draft House and Grill, showcasing Hendler's full line of beer offerings, the company announced Thursday. The revamped tap room will offer the opportunity to introduce the company's brands to an international audience as the first of seven FIFA World Cup matches to be held in Foxborough kicks off June 13th. Hendler is a family-owned business led by CEO Sam Hendler. The company's growth comes amid broader contraction in the craft brewing industry. Nationwide craft beer production fell 5% in 2025, according to the Brewers Association. 60% of breweries reported declines in production, while 39% reported increases. The second largest brewery last year in central Massachusetts was Treehouse Brewing in Charlton, having produced 40,262 barrels in 2024. However, the company did not provide 2025 production data to the Worcester Business Journal or the Brewers Association. Last year's fifth-largest central Massachusetts brewery, Hudson-based Medusa Brewing, also didn't provide data for 2025 and after producing 4,000 barrels in 2024. With Treehouse and Medusa out of the running, the region's fourth-largest brewery is now Westboro-based Cold Harbor Brewing, having produced 2,100 barrels. Fifth is Rapscallion Brewery and Tap Room in Sturbridge with 2,000 barrels. And I have a story about the DCU Center to keep its name for now as Credit Union extends sponsorship for $4.2 million. Marlboro-based Digital Federal Credit Union has inked a deal with the City of Worcester and California-based venue management company Legends Global to extend its naming rights for the city's arena for another 7 years. Under the agreement, the DCU Center will continue to operate under the DCU name even after the credit union's merger with California-based First Tech Federal Credit Union. Amy Peterson, general manager of the venue, said in an email, "The credit union has retained the DCU brand identity following the merger, but will eventually take on First Tech's name and branding," according to a September press release from the credit union. Specifics and timing for changing the DCU Center's name to reflect the credit union's changing branding have not been finalized, said John LaHare, director of marketing for the DCU Center. The newest DCU Center sponsorship extension begins at the end of June 2027, when the current deal ends. The agreement runs through June 2034. DCU will pay $600,000 annually in base naming rights fees, totaling $4.2 million over the life of the deal. The extension was approved during the Worcester Civic Center's Commission's Thursday meeting. The agreement includes annual incentive payments tied to performance. The credit union has held the naming rights of the 14,805-seat arena and convention center since March 2005. The arena underwent a $2.2 million upgrade to its sound system in 2025 and a $7 million upgrade to its seating in 2023. The Worcester Civic Center Commission is working on a request to state legislators to earmark additional funding to allow for maintenance and further upgrades at the arena, according to a video of its April meeting. The latest extension comes as the venue hosts the Massachusetts Democratic Party's nominating convention last weekend. And it's time now for a short break.
Are you interested in taking the bus but aren't sure how? Let the Worcester Regional Transit Authority make it easier for you. The WRTA Travel Training Program is designed to help people who would like to use the regular WRTA fixed route bus service but aren't sure where to begin. You can receive instruction on a one-on-one basis, or you may bring a friend or relative and do it together. You decide. You will learn how to read a schedule, understand transit terminology, pay your fare, where to purchase tickets, what to do in case of an emergency, and all things having to do with learning to use public transit. If there is a particular route or routes that you would like to use, the travel trainer will tailor the training to meet your needs. Travel training is free of charge, and while you are with the travel trainer, your trips are free as well. Please call 508-453-3460 to set up an appointment today.
Welcome back to the Wednesday reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is Wednesday, June the 3rd, and it is 11:15 a.m. Leadership Worcester prepares to welcome 300th participant. The application deadline for Leadership Worcester's class of 2027 is passed, after which the Civic and Business Training Program will welcome its 300th participant. We are trying to build a strong, connected leadership network through Worcester, said Karen Pelletier, Executive Vice President at the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce, which operates the Leadership Worcester program. It is very community-driven. When the current class of 2026 graduates in June, Leadership Worcester will have 290 alumni since it started 11 years ago. The incoming class of 2027 has 28 available slots, putting the program over the 300 milestone once those applicants are accepted. Leadership Worcester spun out of listening sessions Timothy Murray had in the community after he became chamber president and CEO in 2013. The concern at that time was that Worcester needed to build out a bench of capable business and civic professionals to eventually take over leadership in the city, Pelletier said. All the people who participate in the program want to be involved in the city already, she said. The 9-month program includes one all-day session per month covering topics important to city leadership: education, safety, government, economic development, arts and culture, public health, economic development, urban sustainability, and food insecurity. Tuition is $3,200, and participants' employers will often cover the cost. Pelletier also said that financial aid is available and accepted applicants are never turned away over cost concerns. About 70 people apply for the program annually. In selecting the 28 participants, the program strives to include those who bring a unique perspective, striving to have a diversity of industries, ages, gender, race, ethnicity, single and married people, those born in the region, and those who have moved into Greater Worcester. We are purposefully trying to build out a network across sectors, Pelletier said. Notable program alumni include Shay Anderson, Assistant Vice Chancellor for the City and Community Relations at UMass Chan Medical School, Amy Shay, President and CEO of the Health Foundation of Central Massachusetts, Sean Brennan, Marketing and Business Development Director at LPA Architects, Mary Gonzalez, Executive Director of El Buen Samaritan Food Program, and Jackson Restrepo, Business Partner at Wu City Property Management and Restrepo Properties. My current role is all about building relationships to help continue moving Worcester forward, and Leadership Worcester not only strengthened my knowledge of the city's many moving parts, but also helped me establish new relationships across multiple sectors, Anderson said in a statement provided to the Worcester Business Journal. These relationships have helped with new collaborations and initiatives in our community. Pelletier said one of her proudest moments as the program leader came at the Family Child Care Success Project incubator launch in April. Four Leadership Worcester alumni, including Shay, played a key role in starting the hub, which is the first of its kind in central Massachusetts. The incubator aims to provide resources and training for those interested in launching their own child care businesses while providing on-site care for area families with a capacity of 20 children. Worcester is already positioned well, and now we are doing a better job of bringing up those future leaders, Pelletier said. Developer's bankruptcy filing dismissed by judge amid allegations of forged signature. An attempt by Worcester Property Developer to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy has been blocked by a federal judge amid allegations of forgery. A voluntary filing for bankruptcy in April was made in the names of Daniel and Rebecca Yarney, the developers behind Sutton-based Polar Views, a firm in charge of a number of stalled development projects in Worcester. The case relating to the bankruptcy was dismissed on May the 5th, amid an allegation that Daniel Yarney forged the signature of Rebecca Yarney as part of the filing. Neither Daniel nor Rebecca Yarney responded to Worcester Business Journal's requests for comment. Judge Elizabeth Katz dismissed the bankruptcy case on May 5th, citing the fact that the filing failed to include several required documents, according to the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Massachusetts records. The dismissal came amid a request from a creditor to lift an annual the automatic stay relating to the bankruptcy, so that several April foreclosure sales of Yarney-owned properties would remain valid. A motion filed by an attorney representing trustee of QS Lending II Trust, Stephen Ross, argued the stay should be lifted, saying Ross was not notified of the attempt to file for bankruptcy, and that Daniel Yarney had forged the signature of his wife in order to make the Chapter 11 filing. Generally, Chapter 11 filings lead to a stay that initiates as soon as someone files for bankruptcy, temporarily stopping most efforts by creditors to collect debts or take property. An affidavit from Rebecca Yarney filed as part of the motion said that the married couple is undergoing a divorce, and Daniel Yarney forged her signature in order to complete Chapter 11 filing for their joint assets. Gary Hogan, the attorney from Quincy-based firm Marone, Shaughnessy & Udy, representing Ross, declined to comment. Under federal law, making false or fraudulent representation as part of a bankruptcy filing is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Massachusetts law governing forgery of legal documents allows for a prison time up to 10 years. No charges have been filed against Daniel Yarney as of Monday, according to a review of federal and state court records. Katz granted Ross's motion for a stay, allowing the foreclosure sales to remain valid. The allegations of the Ford signature were not directly addressed by Katz's ruling. Multiple Polar View properties in Worcester, slated for development, have sat dormant, including a partially built 12-unit building at 4042 Hooper Street. At 119-125 Chandler Street, the firm had planned a six-story apartment building first announced in 2025. But the original building at the site, which Polar Views has painted pink and covered with murals, remains otherwise untouched. Among other projects, Polar Views has plans for a four-story apartment building at 10 Grosvenor Street. Know-how, how Worcester brands can stay relevant in a shrinking media environment. With the changing landscape of the Worcester media, how do you and your brand stay relevant? As president of the Public Relations Society of America's Greater Worcester chapter, this is a question that keeps us up at night. With a 24-hour news cycle, fewer local beat reporters, shrinking newsrooms, and distrust of journalism in general, the pressure is real. I don't want to date myself, but there was a time when Worcester Media had more than a dozen traditional media outlets, the most robust coverage, plus a journal for almost every beat. Many of my pitches and press releases found good homes. Fast forward to a decade later, there is almost half of what there was in media, and you have to fight tooth and nail for very little ink, keyboard space, or a 10-second soundbite. So what do you do with the limited media you have? Keep showing up. It's about consistency and long-term strategy. Your most important audience is in your own backyard. You need to keep going back to your key messages in order to resonate with your clients' audiences. Make sure on your website, your frequently asked questions, your press releases, your social media, your earned media, all have your key messaging. For example, if Polar Beverages sees Spindrift showing up in coverage where they expected to earn media in key phrases like made with real squeezed fruit, health conscious, better for you, Polar shouldn't change its key terms to get coverage back. The company wants to make sure its channels are consistent with its key messaging. Heritage since 1882, family owned, Worcester and nostalgia. It may need to take inventory to make sure these keywords and phrases are showing up on all channels. The writer, who is Crystal Stower, recently completed Muckrack's Fundamentals of Generative Engine Optimization Certificate. According to Muckrack, a GFO is in the practice of increasing the likelihood that your organization, spokespersons, and core narratives appear in responses generated by AI-powered search platforms. By the end of the course, she realized that PR is in the driver's seat with GEO. GEO is about making sure your client's expertise shows up in an AI-generated answers. When Claude, ChatGPT, and other large language models look for answers to prompts, they search for clear headlines, short sentences, easy-to-read frequently asked questions, a reputable and credible source, and expert citations. Many cite niche trade publications since they don't have access to major media outlets like the New York Times. So you don't need to entirely change the way you do things. Instead, you need to be consistent and intentional with your messages. Another facet of media strategy is to pay attention to your audience. Who are you trying to reach? If you are a manufacturing company and want to target the Worcester business community, then the Worcester Business Journal is a good bet. Additionally, Mass MEP's blog, podcast, or newsletter might be a good option. If you are a new beauty brand opening up in the Woo, you might want to look at smaller trade publications in Massachusetts, an influencer, or a podcast that reviews beauty products. Smaller niche publications get a bad rap with senior executives, but if that's where your audience is, it's your best interest to meet them there. To stay visible in shrinking media markets, keep focus on your key messages, audience, and channels. Image and reputation are not built overnight. It takes a long-term strategy. And again, that was written by Crystal Stewart, is a president and chair of PRSA Greater Worcester, an associate vice president of TVP Communications, a national communications leadership agency. And now it's time for our next break.
You say you love a good book. that you enjoy listening to a good story that piques your interest, which challenges your imagination to explore places where it has never gone before? If so, then Audio Journal's Backyard Bookshelf is for you. Backyard Bookshelf is Audio Journal's award-winning book reading program that always has a local flavor, featuring books about New England as well as books written by local authors or native New Englanders, be it fiction or nonfiction. So join us, won't you? Just tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. and enjoy. That's Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal.
Good morning again, and welcome back to the Audio Journal's reading of the Worcester Business Journal, the latest edition. The first story up today is at April Cannabis Holiday sees $7.3 million in sales. New Cannabis Commission meets for the first time. Cannabis consumers wasted no time taking advantage of the state's newly doubled marijuana purchase limit, placing 900 orders that exceeded the old limit across the first 2 days under the higher limit last month. The law Governor Maura Healey signed April 19th to restructure the Cannabis Control Commission also upped the daily purchase limit from 1 to 2 ounces of marijuana flower or its equivalent. That change took effect immediately, so it was in place prior to one of the busiest sales days of the year, which is April 20th, Executive Director Travis Ahern said Thursday, referring to the unofficial pot holiday observed April 20th. Data provided by the Cannabis Control Commission show that the consumers made 133 purchases in excess of the old 1 ounce limit on April 19th, worth a total of $17,400. On April 20th, there were 767 purchases in excess of 1 ounce, worth a total of $99,667, the Cannabis Control Commission said. Between the 2 days, 900 purchases in excess of 1 ounce totaled $117,067. Cumulatively, the state's marijuana businesses generated $7.32 million in total sales on April 20th, the Cannabis Commission said. Another primary impact of the recent cannabis reform law was on clear display Thursday as the downsized and restructured commission held its first public meeting. The new-look Cannabis Control Commission is led by Chairman Chris Harding, a former businessman who had held high-level jobs in the Baker and Healey administrations. His resume includes 2.5 years as Revenue Commissioner and stints as the Chief of Staff at the Executive Offices for Health and Human Services and Administration and Finance. He was peripherally involved when Massachusetts launched the first legal marijuana industry on the East Coast after 2016's legalization vote. As Revenue Commissioner, he served as a member of the Cannabis Advisory Board and chaired its industry subcommittee. At the start of Thursday's meeting, Harding thanked Governor Maura Healey and the legislature for taking some bold actions in order to help support the mission of the Cannabis Control Commission going forward. Exciting times as we think about the next iteration of what can be and what will be in Massachusetts, he said. Harding added, "I think the combination of the three commissioners here bring a very unique set of experiences, and again, shout out to the governor and her team for the selection process and for bringing us all to the table. Very exciting." The other new commissioner who participated Thursday was Xiomara Del Lobato, who works as Vice President and Chief of Staff at the Western Massachusetts Economic Development Council, where Healy's office said she helps lead regional economic initiatives, business partnerships, and workforce development efforts. Appointee Anthony Wilson, a former city clerk in both Springfield and Cambridge, who has more recently advised cannabis businesses, attended the meeting to observe, but will not be sworn in as a commissioner until next week, Harding said. Under the new Cannabis Commission statute, two commissioners constitute a quorum. I'm very certain that our new chair and commissioners will find that the table has been set for a successful transition, with many initiatives ready to come to fruition at the outset of your tenures, Ahern said, who was hired by the previous iteration of the Cannabis Control Commission, said, "We look forward to working with you to make significant progress for the organization and the industry this year." Though the previous commission was dissolved when Healy signed the reform law April 19th, the Cannabis Control Commission, as an agency, has been active in the time between public commission meetings. Last week, the agency announced that it would begin auditing the THC levels listed on cannabis products, the latest in a series of actions meant to address issues with testing fraud and mislabeled products. If the CCC determines a product's THC potency is not within a range of 75% to 125% of what is on the label, the product would be considered out of compliance and removed from the market through administrative action until the issue is resolved, regulators said. This effort aims to improve patient and consumer awareness statewide and takes into consideration that THC potency is variable for marijuana flower products. It degrades over time when it is stored and other factors, Ahern said. As of April, more than 687 adult-use marijuana businesses were operating in Massachusetts, along with 93 medical businesses, the CCC said. There were another 663 businesses in the pipeline with at least some level of license approval from the CCC. About 20,000 people work in the legal industry. And next up we have St. Gobain's Northborough campus has been named primary North American R&D hub. France-based manufacturer St. Gobain is designating its Northborough campus as its new innovation hub North America, serving a central spot for research and development in the hemisphere. As part of the shift, the 26-acre Northborough campus is undergoing extensive renovations and upgrades, the company announced on Monday. Once done, it is expected to serve as a home base for 400 employees. Saint-Gobain employs 1,200 people locally and 2,700 statewide, including at its large Worcester campus, according to the Worcester Business Journal Research Department. Globally, the company has 162,000 employees. In 2025, Saint-Gobain reported $54 billion in revenue. Northborough's new designation comes as the company rebrands five of its research and development sites as innovation hubs. The Northborough campus celebrated its 40th anniversary in 2025. And we have Worcester's businesses can power the next workforce. This summer, Worcester faces a challenge and an opportunity. Due to funding cuts in the Massachusetts Youth Works program, hundreds of young people who are trained, motivated, and ready to work will not be placed in summer jobs. These are students who will have completed workforce readiness training, who are eager to contribute, and who represent the future of our regional economy. At the same time, employers across central Massachusetts continue to face workforce shortages and talent pipeline gaps. The Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce is partnering with Mass Hire, Worcester Community Action Council, the City of Worcester, and the Boys and Girls Clubs of Worcester on Yes for Worcester to find ways to bridge that divide. We are calling on the Worcester business community to step forward in two possible ways. First, hire summer help directly. The Worcester Community Action Council can connect employers with a pool of prepared young candidates ready to add value from day one. These placements are short-term, structured, and supported, giving business a low-risk, high-impact way to build their future workplace. Second, sponsor a youth job. For $3,200, a business can fund a 6-week summer placement for a young person at one of more than 50 nonprofits across the city. These include trusted institutions like the Boys and Girls Club of Worcester, YMCA of Central Massachusetts, Friendly House, and many others that rely on youth workers to expand services during the summer months. Sponsorship not only provides a young person with critical early work experience, but it strengthens the nonprofit sector that serves our community every day. Without private sector engagement, too many young people will be left without access to that first job, the experience that our chamber member businesses say is foundational to long-term career success. We know this model works. Employers like UMass Memorial Health have demonstrated leadership through initiatives like its Next Gen Workforce Program, which provides structured summer internships that build skills, confidence, and career pathways. Many YouthWorks alumni have gone on to successful careers right here in Worcester, contributing to the strength and vibrancy of our local economy. A first job is more than a paycheck. It's a chance to learn responsibility, build confidence, and see a future. For employers, it's an investment in talent, community, and long-term growth. The task is simple. Hire a young person or fund one. Learn more at masshirecentral.com/yes/W. This was written by Timothy Murray, who is president and CEO of the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce. And we have a quickie here with Rucker's Off the Rails restaurant expanding to Boston. Rucker Investments, Worcester-based Off the Rails restaurant and music venue, is opening a second location in downtown Boston. Off the Rails first opened in 2022 as a country-themed music hall and restaurant at 90 Commercial Street in Worcester. The brand's new restaurant will be located at 25 School Street, steps from downtown Boston landmarks, including King's Chapel and the Old State House. Off the Rails replaces Scholars American Bistro and Cocktail Lounge, which had been at that location for 15 years, according to Boston.com. Rucker Investments purchased Scholars in late 2025 and operated the business for about 6 months before closing it in early May. Off the Rails managing partner, Christopher Besaw, wrote in an email to the Worcester Business Journal. Besaw is a minority owner of the new location. Off the Rails Boston is expected to open later this summer with an upgraded performance space and a redesign of the restaurant. The venue will feature live music, an Americana-inspired menu, and an atmosphere seeking to blend the cultures of Boston and Nashville, according to a company announcement. Off the Rails is exploring additional locations in new markets, Besaw said. The latest move from Rucker Investment comes after the Beverly-based firm purchased the Pulse and CM Pride magazines earlier in May. And we have just a quickie quote that says, I am mindful of the global legacy the company has built over the past 115 years. As COO and president of APAC, I've had the privilege of working with Bemis teams globally and seeing firsthand the amazing value that the Bemis team can create. That was Christina Chen, former Global Chief Operating Officer and Asia Pacific Region President at Shirley Adhesive Manufacturer Bemis Associates, on being promoted to president of the entire company. And it's time now for another break.
Would you like to hear news from Blackstone Valley and Webster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 5 p.m.
And we're back after a very quick break. Potential local options sought as rent control compromise. The campaign behind the proposal to implement statewide rent control said Tuesday the conversations with real estate industry representatives have been fruitful and may lead to a compromise that would avoid voters deciding the issue on November's ballot. We are having productive conversations with real estate leaders and are hopeful that we'll reach agreement on a legislative compromise that can avert the need for the ballot question, said Andrew Farnatino, a spokesperson for the pro-rent control Keep Massachusetts Home. Keep Massachusetts Home is behind the ballot question that would cap year-over-year residential rent increases at the same rate as the increase in the Consumer Price Index, or 5%, whichever is lower. Exemptions would be in place for new construction, owner-occupied units, and more. Proponents say the reform is crucial to keeping residents housed and for fleeing for less expensive states. Opponents of the ballot question, including Governor Mara Healey, say it would hamper housing production and argue that just having a rent control question advancing to November's ballot has had a chilling effect on housing production in Massachusetts. Healey said in March that she got calls from six developers who had lost investment funds when the question was cleared to move ahead. That same month, the Federal Reserve said that one of its New England sources attributed a pullback in multifamily housing investment due to the rent control ballot initiative. A framework of an agreement that was dated May 28th, obtained by the news service, describes a proposal to allow cities and towns to individually decide whether to opt into a rent control policy that would cap annual increases at the lower of either 10% or the increase in CPI plus 5%. It would include many of the same exemptions as the ballot question, but would also allow property owners to reset rents to market rate upon vacancy and would open the door to rent control boards. We were formally contacted by the Yes campaign on Sunday with language that differs from the proposed ballot question. In good faith, we will review their proposal, said Connor Yuntis, spokesperson for the Housing for Massachusetts, the ballot committee that is opposing the initiative. Our campaign is focused on policies that protect property owners, renters, housing production, and community budgets. With a special joint committee on initiative petitions recommended last month that the legislature take no action on the ballot proposal, lawmakers on the panel pointed out that the statewide proposal was distinct from the most recent authorized rent regulation in Massachusetts from 1970 that allowed communities with over 50,000 residents to control rent increases. The 10 community members voted unanimously to not get involved with the ballot question by the deadline for the legislature to single-handedly remove a question from consideration. Members of this committee acknowledge that there is a housing crisis across the Commonwealth that will likely take many different public and private sector solutions to fully address. While there are members of the committee who agree with the concept of rent stabilization, given the complexities of the housing market and the issues raised by the expert, proponents, and opponents of this petition as written, a majority of the committee recommends that the general court take no action, the group wrote in its report. House Speaker Ronald Mariano had warned against the statewide rent control proposal, saying in February that he does not think the proposal on track for November's ballot is going to improve the ability for housing investors to get into the marketplace. I think the barriers are very high, the amount of money that it's going to cost. It's almost going to keep people from even entering into it, he said. A relatively small number of cities and towns have repeatedly sent local option rent control proposals to the legislature for years, but those proposals have never received state clearance. 69% of respondents to a recent poll said they would definitely or probably vote to approve a ballot question imposing statewide rent control. The Policy Research Consulting poll of 608 registered voters was conducted between April 29th and May 7th for the Retailers Association of Massachusetts. The poll's margin of error was plus or minus 4 percentage points. A brief follow-up article, again on the rent control concerns, Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce outlines economic risks of the proposed 2026 rent control mandate. Recently, the Worcester Chamber of Commerce convened its Business and Government Roundtable, bringing together State Senator Michael Moore, Representative Joseph McKenna, and local stakeholders from the Housing for Massachusetts Coalition. The focus of this session was a looming threat to the Commonwealth's economic horizon, the November ballot question on statewide rent control. The Chamber's position is clear. We oppose the measure. While the intent of stabilizing housing costs is noble, the mechanics of this proposal would trigger severe disruptions to a regional housing production and municipal fiscal stability. The math simply does not add up. According to the 2025 Healy-Driscoll Administrative Housing Plan, Massachusetts must add at least 220 housing units by 2035. Locally, the Worcester Housing Production Plan targets 12,000 plus new units by 2033, to stabilize the market and accommodate growth. Additionally, the Affordable Homes Act was passed by the state legislature to build more homes in Massachusetts. However, rent control is a regressive policy that undermines these targets. By capping annual increases at the Consumer Price Index or 5%, the state would create a counterproductive environment. In an era of escalating costs for labor, materials, and insurance, such strict revenue limits will force developers to look elsewhere. Capital is mobile. It will naturally shift away from the Commonwealth toward markets with more predictable regulatory frameworks. This has actually happened in St. Paul, Minnesota. In 2021, when the city implemented a 3% rent cap, and after 3 years of implementation, it saw 80% fewer housing units built in 2024 compared to the previous three-year average. Perhaps most alarming is the lack of local agency. This proposal is a blanket statewide mandate with no opt-out provision. Even if Worcester and Central Mass residents voted against it, the policy would be enforced here regardless of local will. The fiscal fallout would be immediate. A study by the Tufts University Center for State Policy Analysis found that a 5% rent cap would shrink the residential property tax base by 6 to 9% statewide. In Worcester, the projections are even more dire, with property value loss projected at 18.53% over the next decade. Further, To maintain current services, the city might be forced to increase residential tax rates by an estimated 22.74%. For a city that already operates under a dual tax classification system that burdens job creators, this is a recipe for stagnation. Worcester has historically led the way in providing naturally occurring affordable housing. Roughly 33% of our housing stock currently falls into this category. Units affordable to low and moderate income housing without government subsidies. We should be working to protect this legacy by removing regulatory barriers and modernizing codes to allow for greater density. Instead of a failed one-size-fits-all mandate, we need pro-housing creation policies that encourage the creation of all types of units rather than restrictions. The Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce urges a no vote on the rent control ballot issue. We must protect our city's fiscal health, our property values, and our regional housing future. And I have another quote. This is on the Community Health Link closure. There is no plan currently for Open Sky to operate any other Community Health Link programs. Decisions about the future of these programs will be made by UMass Memorial Health with guidance from the state agency that fund those services. That was said by Ken Bates, the president and CEO of Open Sky Community Services, on the Worcester nonprofit taking over only two programs from behavioral services provider Community Health Link ahead of UMass Memorial's closing its division. UMass Memorial is seeking to transfer 17 CHL programs. You have been listening to the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or your iPad. A quick reminder, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette will be aired at noon and again at 7 p.m. today. This is Mary with Jane. Thank you for listening.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you or a loved one losing your vision? Mass Commission for the Blind can help. Reclaim your independence with new skills and assistive technologies. Partner with Mass Commission for the Blind to develop your vision for the future. If you're blind or visually impaired, find out if you're eligible to register for services to help you achieve your career and life goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.